at this point in the hour, we want to add a voice to a conversation we've been having on The Takeaway for weeks now regarding gender roles, violence, where messages of permissiveness regarding violence come from, and who in society may be responsible for saying no to violent behavior toward women. There's a conversation unfolding on Twitter about this. We want to update you on that. Listener Sal writes, "Start with women being equals and respecting that. A woman is never asking for it with her clothes," says Sal. Listener JC says, "We could try to teach boys that shame belongs to the perps, not the victims. Moms and dads should talk to their sons early." We've spoken to young women, mothers, young men. Today, a father weighs in on the violence in India and the global conversation in the week since a young woman was brutally gang raped and left for dead in the streets of New Delhi. And over the weekend, Indian police said they arrested 7 suspects in another gang rape of a bus passenger in India, this one in Punjab. Akhil Sharma has firsthand experience and insights to offer. He was born in Delhi, immigrated to the U.S. when he was 8 years old. He's now professor of creative writing at the Newark campus at Rutgers University and author of An Obedient Father. Thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
What are fathers' roles traditionally in India and as you envision them going forward after these terrible incidents?
I don't actually expect that these rapes are going to have any effect on the role of fathers. I mean, this has been going on forever. The American Western media has focused on these 2 rapes. I assume that more than one rape like this occurs every single day in India. So I have no expectation of behavior changing because of this. The role of fathers is, at least for me, when I was growing up, I actually didn't understand who my father was. I grew up in a middle class family, but I, at least as a child, as a young boy, I thought my father had been assigned to us by the government because he didn't really talk much. Mm. I actually thought he didn't really serve much of a purpose, and he was scary. And when I talk to friends, that's how they've described their relationships with their fathers as well. The father is the person who hits you or who's the disciplinarian. I think that the rapes that occurred might have something to do with the role of the father, but I think that mostly they have to do with the fact that people will do most things that they can get away with. If you feel that you can cause somebody misery and not be punished for it, then people will do it.
Is it possible that the sort of taciturn nature of the traditional relationship between men and their fathers, this quietness, this lack of candor, the sense that, appointed by the government, that's really interesting to hear you say that, that contributes to a sense of sexual tension, of lack of clarity about how to act out mm-hmm. sexual tensions of one kind or another, particularly in places in Asia where sometimes it's very challenging, given the population pressures, of finding mates, of finding ways of dating, of actually meeting women who you might want to have a future with.
There's certainly lack of clarity as to how to be sexual in India. That's certainly true, a mother might threaten a child, a boy she's caught masturbating, by saying, "What should I do? Should I take you to the police? Should I beat you?" So that's not uncommon, behavior like that. But again, I think it's appropriate to separate out a crime and a vicious crime from sexual ambiguity. I don't think anybody would say that it's okay to rape. So when people are doing something like this, they're doing it largely because they feel that they can get away with it. It's like stealing,
Right, but let's focus on that. Why would you think you could get away with it? What message somewhere in a setting, whether it's a bus or would permit that to go on without someone intervening? There's got to be a message somewhere that suggests you walk away or you pay no attention or this woman here is not a human.
If you in the bus, for example, what happened was you had the bus driver and the conductor, the ticket collector, who took the bus to a place, and they were the only two people on the bus along with the woman, and there he raped her, and his friends joined in and raped her. So it wasn't that you had a random collection of people. It was sort of, they had been pre-selected. The reason you think you can get away with is because you read in the papers and you see all the time that this people can get away with it. And because you know that a woman who's raped is unlikely to be able to get help from anyone.
So it's the lack of sanction in the criminal justice system that really delivers the message that this is something you can get away with.
Yes, that's where I personally believe that this is where you learn that you can get away with doing these things.
If, as a father, you were to deliver some lesson to your son, or if a father was to deliver a lesson to a son, what form would that take? What would you want to say to make sure that something like this doesn't happen?
You know, it's as with everything, you know, it's not one lesson, but sort of cultivating empathy. And that's sort of a lifelong thing. I'm not sure what you can do, what simple lessons there are. I mean, the simple lessons of some person periodically being arrested isn't much. Obviously, it hasn't had much of an effect.
But do you think that traditions in India prevent men from developing as an absolute a sense of empathy towards women?
That's a very general claim. We all tend to be selfish, right? All of us have selfishness inside us. In India, where men are treated a little bit better than women, that selfishness is cultivated a little bit more.
Although a lot of women on this program would say, not a little bit, it's a lot. I fear for my life in India. I grew up terrified of these kinds of incidents. That's a bigger disparity than a little bit.
It's when you cultivate, when there's a slight bias, right? That bias gets magnified when you have, again, you have, it makes sense to me that women would be scared, especially in Delhi. That to me is totally reasonable. That, of course, doesn't mean that every single person is behaving like this. So a slight bias when you have 1.2 billion people or 1.3 billion people.
It's magnified. It
gets magnified. Yeah.
Akhil Sharma is a professor of creative writing at Rutgers, Newark, and author of An Obedient Father, one of the voices weighing in on the events of the last several weeks. You can weigh in as well at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. Akhil, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We've been looking this hour at the boundaries between what's public and what's private in our society and how questions play into policy governing everything from who buys guns to how we use technology. Here's a listener idea.
My name is Jeff. I'm calling from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm the last person in the world to think of ideas like this, but what if there was something within each weapon that identified it? For example, a chip or something. We have them in our phones. I don't see what it would be so impossible to put them on a weapon. And that way we'd be able to know where they are and when they would be getting there at school.
Controlling gun violence. We love your ideas. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.